This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's the Daily Digest on The Bigger Picture with Tina Camilla, Tisha Ik, and Shamla Gunnison. We were talking about the Fire Festival documentary earlier. Now it's about how the healthcare industry contributes to climate change.
And on that note, we have a Twitter poll. Would you accept hospitals reusing single-use medical devices to reduce medical waste? And we've got 86% voting in no and only 14% saying yes. And some thoughts from Azrul, who says he thought that surgical force get autoclaved and reused, so I guess they do. Oliver Howard says there's a reason why those are designated as single use to reduce cross contamination. Even nurses who suffer needle pricks get a lot of unnecessary attention. And you've got a point, Oliver. And the thing is that I think the idea behind the reusing is that hospitals are supposed to reprocess these devices according to strict protocols, which includes cleaning, sterilizing, and disinfecting it. So keep your thoughts coming in. Tweet us at BFM Radio or WhatsApp us at 018-789-8899.
So why were we asking that question on Twitter, Sherwick?
Yeah, so two doctors from Massachusetts General Hospital in Boston in the US have called out their fellow physicians on climate change, urging them to do more about the problem. In a perspective piece published in the New England Journal of Medicine just last week, Dr. Karen Solomon and Dr. Regina LaRocque called climate change a health emergency. You guys remember in an episode of The Daily Digest last week, we talked about climate change as one of the major global health threats identified by WHO, mm-hmm. the World Health Organization. So that's in line with what the two doctors were writing about. But they were also emphasizing the point that it's the healthcare sector that is contributing a lot to making our planet sick.
Yeah, so in the US, the healthcare sector accounts for nearly 1/10 of their greenhouse gas emissions. So if the US healthcare system were a country, it would have a $3.3 trillion GDP, and it would be 7th worldwide in terms of total emissions. That's not a small number.
Indeed, no. Yeah. So life-saving equipment like CAT scanners, respirators, dialysis machines have huge energy demands currently met with fossil fuel energy. Hospitals also produce almost 0.5 kilo of hazardous medical waste per bed per day.
Wow. And it's not just hospitals that are causing the problem, because the healthcare sector consists of a carbon-intensive supply chain that includes transportation, manufacturing, and retail as well. So there's a global group called Healthcare Without Harm that advocates to transform the healthcare sector to make it more ecologically sustainable. Let's hear from the president, Gary Cohn, in a TEDx Madrid talk about healthcare's carbon footprint.
Hospitals use twice as much energy as commercial buildings, and the vast majority of this energy is dependent on fossil fuels. They're just as addicted to fossil fuels as the rest of the economy. And that addiction is literally killing us. Each year, more than 7 million people die from indoor and outdoor air pollution related to the burning of fossil fuels. That's twice as many people that die from AIDS, tuberculosis, and malaria combined. So climate change is bringing an entirely new reality to the healthcare sector and a mandate to have a much broader healing mission. Hospitals are still enormous consumers of toxic chemicals. Some of those chemicals leach directly into vulnerable patients when they're getting their fluids from IV bags and tubing made of PVC plastics. Some of the disinfectants used are asthma triggers, which help explain why nurses have some of the highest asthma rates of any profession. And then there are the buildings themselves, built with toxic building materials, furniture drenched in toxic flame retardants, toxic cleaners on the floor, depressing lighting. They look bad, they smell bad, they feel bad. It's as if the buildings themselves were on life support.
I must say, I don't think I've ever really thought about the environmental impact of healthcare. Mm. And if it does seem like if healthcare doesn't step up to help fix the problem, it's going to cause more climate change-related health problems. And between 2030 and 2050, 250,000 deaths could be caused by climate change-related health issues, such as heat exposure, mosquito-borne diseases, diarrheal disease, malaria, dengue, coastal flooding, and childhood childhood stunting. Air pollution alone causes 6.5 million premature deaths each year.
We are also increasingly recognizing the effects of climate change on mental health, such as how floods and other extreme weather events increase the risk of depression and anxiety. And climate and other environmental changes also have adverse agricultural effects, such as affecting the yield and nutritional value of crops. And these in turn are going to affect what we eat, right, in our diet. And that in turn will then have an impact on the way we are able to manage non-communicable diseases.
Mm. On top of all of that, hospitals will also be the hardest hit when extreme weather events happen. The experience of Memorial Medical Center after Hurricane Katrina hit New Orleans is a lesson for all healthcare providers. Here's Gary again speaking at a climate health summit where he described the impact of the hurricane.
What we've learned from Hurricane Sandy and Hurricane Katrina and a number of other events is that we are completely unprepared for climate change, that we haven't designed, obviously, we haven't designed our infrastructure, our supply chains, our response to acknowledge those public health impacts of climate change, those extreme weather events. We have a long way to go. In Hurricane Katrina, it was mentioned that a number of the hospitals basically failed. They had to be evacuated. People died. Memorial Hospital in New Orleans, where there was no electricity, all the electrical equipment, all the backup generators were in the basement, got totally flooded. People had to go up to the helipad at the top and the parking garages. They had to throw furniture to break the windows on the top floor because it got to be 110 degrees because there was no operable windows and there was no cooling. This was, you know, in the end of August. So it wasn't designed to address climate change.
The two doctors who originally wrote the article, Solomon and LaRocque, they wrote, "Physicians are well-placed and we believe morally bound to take a lead role in confronting climate change with the urgency that it demands." We hear now from Gary one last time about the unique role of the healthcare sector in leading climate change action.
We see three roles fundamentally that the healthcare sector can play in society. And they're unique. It's unique in that way, how profound those roles can be. One is, as I've said, is to mitigate our own footprint within our facilities and our clinics. And lead by example. Let's be the sector of society that makes the transition to renewable energy economy and shows the rest of society how to go there. Let's be the sector of society that shows how we can reduce the amount of meat that we eat and that has positive health impacts and positive climate impacts. The second important role is resilience. Let's make sure that the infrastructure we have, that the healthcare facilities and clinics that we have, they're the last buildings standing in extreme weather events. They function. They can operate if the grid fails. They can be the place where there's clean water when the system gets flooded and there's no clean water, so that it is the anchor for the resilience in the community. And then the third role, which is to be messengers, to be advocates for the policies that are going to make this all a lot better.
So going back to the Solomon and LaRocque article, here are some of their suggestions for healthcare to become more climate smart. You know, the first thing is to reduce your carbon footprint. So hospitals should commit to 100% clean energy or achieve carbon neutrality. And this is not impossible because hospitals in the US are doing it. One hospital network, Gundersen Health System, achieved energy independence several years ago and produces more energy than it consumes using wind power, solar power, and methane from a local landfill. So then the question would be, would the healthcare industry, would hospitals as a business be willing to consider, environmental conservation as feeding to their bottom line?
Hmm. I mean, I guess that's a question that most businesses are increasingly having to contend with, right? It's just that when it comes to something like healthcare, because the issues that we often talk about are related to something that we often view as more important, i.e. our personal health, we often don't hold hospitals accountable in quite that way that we would hold perhaps an oil and gas company.
Yes, absolutely.
Because hospitals are already there to save lives. So everything else is secondary. The life is first, right? Yeah. It's the people first. And then hopefully planet second and profit third. But arguable.
It's a weird, vicious cycle, isn't it? That hospitals are contributing so much to the problems of the planet and making people sicker. which is then driving people to the hospitals. And look, if you wanted to be really cynical, you could you could see a conspiracy there. But no, I think that, you know, we're also talking about healthcare as a profession. In being in the business of healing, of saving lives, you know, I'm sure that you know they would eventually see sustainability as the driving force of their business.
Right, and I mean, I think physicians can actually educate their colleagues, patients, students about the health effects of climate change and the need for rapid reductions in fossil fuel use. They can also engage lawmakers to take action on climate change. So it's not necessarily just about making these large industry-wide changes, which may perhaps take longer and need a larger sort of organizational will. Mm. There are things that can be done on a more person-to-person level as well.
Yeah, yeah.
I wouldn't make hospitals change their electrical supply to, you know, solar power or wind power without it being tried and tested in the, you know, consumer market, for example, where, you know, the demand, where you can test and see that it doesn't fail, or the failure rate and how do you come back from it, right?
And you can't afford to take that risk.
Exactly. Yeah. With a hospital, no, I wouldn't. So it's okay if they're late to the game, if they're not in the forefront of making all these drastic changes and exploring the green energy market and all that, it's fine. But, you know, be open about it, I suppose, is the thing, right?
Yeah, and also, like you said, when healthcare professionals themselves acknowledge the health impact of climate change problems, then they are really strong advocates, they are really strong champions. I mean, you know, they're very respected figures in society and in decision, in policy making. When you frame climate change as a health issue, it takes on a very urgent and immediate need. Whereas for ordinary average citizens, thinking about climate change and the impact of their lives is very difficult for them to make that connection. The earth is going to be destroyed. Yeah, but it's not going to happen to me in my lifetime. Mm. But, you know, the impact of air pollution, that's going to affect me right now. Yeah.
And I think it is asking for a lot for patients who are going to a hospital for, you know, to deal with their own issues, to be asked to think about the environment at that point in time. So it needs to be something that is worked into the DNA of the organization, of the hospital, rather than something that comes as an afterthought, I think. So like at every level, they're actually already kind of like what Gary from Healthcare Without Harm says, where it should be something that they consider at every level, not just in a tokenistic way. I suppose that's correct me if I'm wrong, Xiaowei, but isn't that why WHO's first global conference on air pollution and health last year actually committed to reducing the number of deaths from air pollution by 2/3 by 2030? Mm-hmm. And that sort of brings together this idea of health and environment in a way that's quite tangible.
Yes, exactly. And
yeah, and yet, you remember, Xiaowei, when we did a Health News Digest on single-use devices and how, despite having the methods to sanitize and to make sure that these devices can be reused, when that report came out about how our local hospitals were reusing these devices, and we went to look into papers, journal papers that were published from other countries where this is common practice, people were still really angry about the fact that they were reusing single-use devices, mostly blaming the hospitals as being profit-driven.
Cutting costs. Yeah. Cutting corners, yeah.
But you still have to pay for those sanitizing methods, isn't it?
Which are very expensive.
Yeah. Exactly. It might be almost as costly as getting a new one, right? And I think it is that, yes, you want to cut costs, which makes sense, but you also want to limit your contribution to landfills.
Yes. I don't think people think about that, though, right? When you think about healthcare, you don't think about the fact that if they reused these devices, that there would be fewer of them going out. Because instead, what you're thinking about is, I don't want them to use, you know, what if they don't clean it properly? I mean, honestly, the first thing I said to you this morning when Xiaowei sent this article to me was that, but, you know, if we're still hearing about people getting cross cross-contamination from blood transfusions. Mm-hmm. Am I really confident enough to know that a surgical forceps was being reused, which is something I just heard about today? Yeah. I didn't know that was something that happened.
I mean, that does drive home. It doesn't take away from the point that you need to get your fundamentals right first. You need to have strong healthcare systems in place before you can even talk about the next level of your impact. If you are already doing harm to patients from what is supposed to be basic routine healthcare procedures, then no. This is you are not at this level yet.
Like, you have larger problems to address, I think.
That's right. Yeah. And once your healthcare system is strong, then it has the, I suppose, respect, and then it might have some form of autonomy, and you can decide that you have, not decide, but to demonstrate your financial independence in a way. Mm-hmm. Healthcare companies with large investment portfolios sometimes hold stock in polluting sectors, right? So why have stocks in petroleum products, coal, natural gas? Of course, yes, you need to have your financial forest to make sure that you have your finances in place, but look elsewhere. Like, don't go into these sectors. And hospitals and even professional organizations can cut their ties with these companies if they want by divesting their stocks in these companies.
Yeah. So I mean,
maybe go look at
renewable energy.
Maybe, but don't use it yet. You shouldn't be trial.
Invest in more research to improve the renewable energy options. But I mean, it really drives home the point. Healthcare is a business. Hospitals are owned by companies which are looking to sort of shore up their coffers as well to become a steady, viable business. So, in doing some research, I found out that one of our own hospital chains here in Malaysia is owned by a parent company that has oil and gas interests. But it's really no surprise. We are in Malaysia where our national economy is built on the O&G industry. So, if you are thinking about government hospitals, I mean, it's all too interlinked, I feel, for us to be able to just say divest or separate those interests.
It's a bit of a wishful thinking, but I think, you have the true autonomy. I think you can kind of dictate certain things.
Professional medical organizations, if I'm not mistaken, one of the major ones in the US or Canada is big enough that they actually have an investment portfolio. So they have divested their stocks in oil and gas. So that's where I think organizations like that can really be independent and take that neutral kind of stand.
Perhaps, in some ways, thinking of healthcare as an industry helps, because if we are holding other industries to these accountabilities, perhaps we can also hold healthcare to those standards as well. Just because they're in the business of saving lives doesn't mean that they're not a business.
So
hold them to the same standards that we would hold other businesses.
Well, there's a comment here on Twitter from Lian Jim. The reason hospitals don't inform patients on the reuse of single-use items is because it will cause unnecessary worries. Just like this post, when people see single-use, they believe it's only for single-use. But if there's proper regulation, those items can be reused.
I agree. Yeah. The perception of it, actually, when it comes to your own body, can be quite confronting.
Yeah. So, of course, we were being a little bit cheeky in our poll because it was confronting and it was provocative. And
because it's marketed as single use, although it can be reused.
Right.
There you go. Well, in the words of Dr. Solomon LaRogue, they write that changing our institutions and society will therefore require concerted, organized, and forceful efforts. So, I mean, I think the healthcare sector can do this, considering the size of the sector in our economy. Whatever actions it takes, even if it's small, it will reverberate significantly in society, I think. And for an example of how a hospital here in Malaysia is moving towards reducing waste, do tune in to Health and Living at 4 p.m. later today, where I will be speaking to Professor Dr. Deborah Sim from the University of Malaya about the environmental impact of unsafe disposal of medications.
And I think that's the sign that the show is coming to an end. If you missed any part of it, you can download the podcasts on bfm.my or via our BFM app. I'm Tina Camellia alongside Tisha Week and Sharmila Gunnison on The Daily Digest. Here's Sick of You by Lou Reed on BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.